You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as it's a Tuesday, it's the double-headed Dream Team edition. And tonight, the double heads are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and also David Shapiro from Sasfin Security. Sorry, Gary, I just had a blank
I've been away a long time. It's fine.
I've been forgotten on the show. Yeah, unlike me, you sound nice and bright and breezy. And Gary, we're coming to the end of the results season. And let's have a quick and corny look at what you've seen from JSE listed companies. Your overall impression, whether it be dual listed, whether it be companies that have the majority of their income from overseas, or just South African companies. What have you made of it all?
Well, I think, you know, it's been a very, very solid results season. And I think, you know, if you look at the, especially on the local markets, so many of our companies are just so incredibly cheap. I mean, if you ever look at, let's say something, you know, one of the kind of small to mid-caps, I mean, more mid-cap than small-cap in the form of Invicta, you can see just absolutely incredible share price growth. But, you know, didn't declare a dividend, but has decided to buy back shares and return capital to shareholders. Like, my sense is that the operating environment is very, very difficult in South Africa. But the South African, if you want to call it a South African in companies, I know Invicta is now trying to become more of a diversified international company, but they're managing to make it work, even in a very difficult environment, you know, with load shedding, with all the kind of legacy of the pandemic, they're making it work. And we saw it in the unemployment numbers coming down today as well. And it's been a sense throughout the reporting. I mean, if you look at Standard Bank that came out earlier this week as well, an incredible 10-week update from Standard Bank.
Yeah.
Partially because interest rates are higher, but also because there is, you know, there is weirdly this underlying economic activity that is happening in South Africa. And when you have stock prices as cheap as they are in South Africa as well because of the pessimism, it makes for very interesting reading.
Well, that's a very good and very encouraging sign. Now, David Shapiro is more cynical than you, I believe, when it comes to investing in purely South African income-generating stocks. But I saw something on, I think it was Biz News this morning, David, where they were talking about this competition between Pete Fullion and Magnus Haystack. Now, Pete Fullion has this 100% fund, 100% SA-based fund, whereas Magnus Haystack, of course, is very much more in your camp, I think. In other words, diversifying if you can overseas. I don't know who's winning at the moment. Obviously, it's up and down. But what would you say to the two without being nasty to either of them?
No, I'm not nasty to either of them. But it to be where I agree with Gary.
Yes.
Is that what I think we're seeing in Invicta's results comes through in Reunert's results, probably Hudeco and businesses like that, Omnia's results, all of those are showing more investment activity here. Now, by investment activity, I'm talking about fixed investment. Now, I look across where I'm staying here near the Wondrous, and there must be these huge buildings. Now, every one of these buildings is now suffering because of load shedding. Somewhere along the line, the management committees are all saying, you know what? We've got to put up solar. You know what? We've got to get a generator. And I think every business in town has probably got the same attitude. So you're suddenly saying there's going to be a lot of private investment in issues like that. Self-sufficiency, you know, the need to break away from the grid. And I'm using this as a simple investment area, but I think the other side of it is that there's also this move towards renewable that's going to take place, which is a worldwide phenomenon. So you're suddenly seeing a lot more happening there. So I'm more inclined to shift towards that than I am, say, to Spar or to ShopRite or to any of those consumer companies where consumers are facing 10.5% prime rate plus. So I think what Gary's saying is, I think if you dig deep into the small and medium, you're going to find some real pearls. And I think that's where Pitt focuses his attention. Mm. Where it comes to larger investment, you know, where you've got a much broader array of, you know, money or something, and you've got to look for longer term, then of course I think that's where Magnus is going offshore. But he's quite aggressive in it, you know, and he's quite, what's the word, you know, he's quite
He's quite vociferous when it comes to, yeah, and people misinterpret his forceful point of view with being anti-South Africa, which he's not, otherwise he wouldn't still be living here. He's got the means and he's got the ability to be overseas, and okay, he travels a little bit, and I don't want to talk about his personal life, but you know what I mean. He's not anti-South Africa, he's a proud South African, but he's just pro-diversification, I think. Yeah, that's another word, yeah. Exactly. Now, Gary, given what Gary's just said, I mean, Gary, given what David's just said and what you said earlier on, would you be investing in the company that's doing what David said, in other words, you know, renewable energy, et cetera, or would you be investing in the companies that provide that service, provides the renewable energy? Because it's like the old adage, you don't invest in an airline, you invest in the land around the airport, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, don't buy the gold miner, buy the company that sells the shovels. But if you look at, when you sit as a portfolio manager, it comes down to, you know, trying to diversify the portfolio and achieve a specific investment objective. So, you know, sometimes the gold miners are cheaper, sometimes it's better to buy the shovels, and it just really depends on the time and the correlation between the different types of sectors and companies. So there's a lot that goes into it, and I don't think I'm either pro buying shovel companies or pro buying gold miners. It really depends on the individual company's prospect, and you know, it's very difficult to answer that kind of general question. And you know, looking at South Africa, I mean, I stand by my comment. I think there's some very interesting, very specific cases. If you go and look at something like Kaap Agri, I think it's a very, very interesting investment case at the moment. But at the same time, there's no way that I'm saying to clients that your pension fund, if you're living in South Africa and you have your house in South Africa and you run a private business in South Africa, putting in solar panels for people and you're making a decent living at it, and maybe you've even got enough cash to go and buy a holiday home, do I think you should go invest the rest of your pension funds in something like Kaap Agri? Absolutely not. I think David's point is well made. It's diversification that you require. And so many private clients, once you've paid tax, and you're sitting with an after tax pool of capital, the sensible thing to do there is diversify offshore. And as much as I say, I think the results out of the smaller mid caps have been very, very exceptional in South Africa, I can say 85% of Rand Swiss clients currently sit out, assets currently sit outside of South Africa. It's just, it's one that I think it is a sensible diversification move. And you've also got to understand that offshore isn't just, it's offshore or it's local. I mean, there's so many different things. There's people that sell shovels offshore, and there's gold miners offshore. There's a huge variety offshore that you can go and invest in. And it really comes down to the type of person that you're working with, the type of capital you're applying, and also obviously the specific opportunity that you're looking at.
It's very interesting you say that, because of course it's the, as you quite rightly said, the variety and the number and the universe that you can pick and choose from overseas, whereas in South Africa, I did a very interesting podcast with a very clever woman in Cape Town from a large asset management company the other day, and she was talking about the delistings and why they're happening, and is it good or is it bad, and there was arguments for both. But she said when she started, her investable universe was 370 stocks. It's no 340 stocks. It's now down to 272, because they've been kicked out, but because, David, they're not on the exchange anymore. So obviously you'd much rather go and say, goodness, look at this company in California, look at this company in Vietnam or the Netherlands or something. That is the key. It's more, I say it's more stimulating, because in South Africa, purely local investors are chasing fewer and fewer opportunities.
Yeah, exactly.
Go on, Gary.
Sorry, go, David.
You know what, Lindsay? You've heard me to the point of nausea, you know, saying my investment strategy is, if a person comes to me, I say, look, I'm going to buy you the best 25, 30 companies in the world. In fact, that's a lot, maybe 20 to 25. And if a South African company makes the cut, I'd include it. Unfortunately, I can't find any local company that can fit that bill. So I'm with Gary. You know, I don't look at regions. I look at companies, and we say, you know, where do you want to be invested? What are the themes? And it's as simple as that. So I don't take a political stand. I don't, it's got nothing to do with the Rand. It's got nothing to do with the country or the state of the country. It's got to do with the opportunities, that we can go into. And you know, I don't know how Gary invests, but I mean, there are so many different ways of investing offshore. As I said before, I could operate my business from a small room where I am at the moment, simply going onto an international platform that will hold my client shares, you know, collect the dividends, do all of that.
Yes.
All I'd have to do is give advice, buy or sell this. You know, that's how simple it is.
Yeah. Gary, you were going to say something, Gary, David answered. What were you going to say?
Yeah, no, I was just saying, I mean, to your point about the limited investable universe, of course it is a concern, and I just think about how our business has changed. We've been, you know, when I started, you know, in Randswiss, 7 years ago, we were very much, we were focused on JSE stockbroking. I mean, at that stage, kind of mid-Zoomer years, we were already saying, listen, we see the opportunity offshore, and it's why we very quickly set up, you know, what David's talking about, these offshore links. And there's a lot of, I think, value that South African asset managers and advisors can add to clients when they are operating in the international territory. And David talks about, you know, it's simple to kind of give a buy and sell recommendation, and there's great platforms to use. But there's also all the structuring around it as well, especially if it's a South African tax resident, and then suddenly there's either like wrappers or offshore trusts involved. There's a lot of value that can be added by the advisor in the offshore space, number one. But also just look at the local universe. I mean, how our business has changed from a primarily South African-based securities broker to diversifying out of just equity asset classes. I mean, you know, our structured product business, which looks at obviously international structures, but has promoted and been involved in the launch of so many local domestic structures as well, that give clients capital protection, that are hybrid instruments that contain bonds, and there's derivative overlays that create this beautiful contingent payoff profile. But it really is out of desperation for variety. You can't go and sell the same three grocers to people and be like, well, this time it's the best opportunity in the world. No, because sometimes clients have very different requirements, and we've had to get very, very creative to almost expand that investment universe. And part of it has been offshore, but part of it has also been to look at different asset classes and just different types of securities that fulfill very different needs for clients.
Let me ask you this, Gary, and I'll stay with you on this one. If you could get everything out, foreign exchange reserve bank restrictions were completely lifted and you could invest anywhere, how much of the 100 rand would you put in South Africa, and how much would go overseas? And you've got to be honest here and not politically correct, okay?
So, Lindsay, that's again a very difficult question without me opening my personal finances on your podcast, because the fact is that you need enough capital and enough security locally to ride out the kind of the pressures that you feel locally as well. I mean, you know, I may be different from listeners, I may be, you know, similar to listeners, but I mean, I run a business, I have capital requirements in South Africa. That means that I have to have a pool of capital in South Africa. There's no question about that. At the same time, you know, your point to Reserve Bank, at least the South African Reserve Bank exchange controls, they largely are lifted, though. I mean, if you actually think about it, you know, is it exchange controls that's holding me back from diversifying internationally? Absolutely not. I mean, you've got your 1 million calendar allowance. It's, you know, we've got roughly just over a month to go before it's going to reset. So we haven't used it this year. We've had a nice little strengthening in the local currency, and we can feel it on our FX desk, guys moving money out. You've got a month to go. In a month's time, it's going to reset. That's a million. To do a foreign tax clearance certificate and get the 10 million allowance, which you can do for you and your spouse, we do it for, it takes about 5 days to get it for a client with the paperwork in order.
As quick as that. You surprised me. Yeah, okay, very good. Okay.
Another 20 million that you can take out there. And if you are a client that has more than that, it's a special Reserve Bank application, and you can essentially take an unlimited amount of funds out. You're not constrained by that. So I think, you know, the distinction between how much should you have offshore and how much should you have locally, That comes down to everyone's personal choice, and it comes down to their personal circumstances. I think that the skew at the moment, there are a lot of people that are very pessimistic, and I think they do, to an extent, over-diversify. And then suddenly there are pressures locally, and then they've kind of almost got to bring funds back. So it's not about shipping everything out from my point of view. It's about having that nest egg overseas. It's about looking at your lifestyle and what your requirements are going to be, and trying to do it as sensibly as possible. But it's a very personal question. If you want to put it better, I can't give you, it's like an 85% rule.
No, of course I understand
I'm more direct than Gary.
Well, of course you are. You've got nothing to lose. You're David Shapiro. No. Away you go.
I think that what Gary says is 100% correct. There's very little exchange control left, and I must hand it. As long as you're tax compliant, as long as you've paid your taxes and up to date, and you will get permission to move money. And you know, to a large extent, they're very understanding. You know, if you have a significantly large amount and say, look, I can't invest it in South Africa, the choices are not here. It's very easy to move large sums of money. So from that point of view, I've got no compunction in putting 100% offshore. I understand what Gary says about the need to have local money here. You know, that's another thing. But, Lindsay, to move money in and out is absolutely no problem anymore. You know, it's as easy as an ATM. And I think people forget that. You know, sometimes your mindset's back in the 60s and 70s, you know, where someone would meet you around the corner and say, listen, I brought back some dollars from America. Do you want to buy it? You know, that kind of thing. It's long, long gone.
And people putting Krugerrands in a secret compartment in their luggage and going to London and that sort of thing.
You know, all of that.
I remember those days.
You don't need that.
No.
You don't need that.
It's also interesting, David, and I'll stay with you on this one, is because a lot of people say, oh, goodness, I've got all my money offshore. And someone might say to him, oh, really? At the barbecue, braai or dinner party or something. They say, really? What, you mean Facebook? And reel off a couple of others that have fallen 50, 60, 70% this year. It's not a panacea to investment glory, is it, being overseas?
Not, you know what I'm going to do now while I'm talking to you, because I think this to me is one of the most pertinent issues, you know, that I continue to promote.
Right.
And, that is that if you look at I'm going to do this now, you know, if you look at the JSC, which is, over a 10-year view, if you would have invested in dollars, you know, in the JSC, over 10 years versus the S&P over 10 years, the amount that you've lost. In fact, if I look at a 10-year basis, I think the JSC in 10 years, here you are, I've got it.
Okay.
Sorry, I was just I can't multitask. I'm getting old, you know, so I can't put a chart up and try and talk.
You're doing very well. You're talking. I mean, nothing will ever stop you talking, David, that's for sure.
No. So here's a very important chart.
Mm-hmm.
And it expresses everything. If you would have 10 years ago, if you would have put $100 into the JSC, and sorry, I'm not working on total return, so forgive me for all those purists.
Yeah, I'll do a quick total return for you if you want. I'm busy putting it together in the background for you.
Slightly quicker than David.
$100 in the JSC over 10 years would give you 99.69. In other words, you're flat. You haven't done it yet.
Okay.
$100 in the S&P over 10 years would give you $280.
So nearly three times your money.
Mm. You're nearly three times richer. So we've lost that purchasing power. You know, we've lost purchasing power by remaining in this market. Mm. And I'm using that as a dollar base, not a rand base, but it's basically the same thing. And I think that trend is likely to continue. It's not, there might be a year or two where it, you know, you get a good year like we have, but that gives you, why is that happening? And that's, if you put the UK market, you probably get the same result as the JSE.
Yes.
It's the quality of the market. It's the quality of the economy of the US, which is a dynamic economy, which has grown because of the investment in technology. And that's where it's all come from. So I'm saying that's the challenge, you know, and that's what we're looking for. So it's not a matter of the region. It's a matter of, you know, what that economy represents. So, you know, that 10 years, these last 10 years have been incredibly rewarding for anybody in the U.S. market because of that. And I see that continuing. I don't see that moving away because I don't think the U.K., I don't think South Africa have got the kind of companies that can actually compete with what we're seeing in the US.
And it's slightly strange as well, Gary, I'll bring you in on this one, because I was talking about that podcast about the delistings. How many companies that probably shouldn't have come to the market in the late 1990s came to the market, the JSE Securities Exchange. They were little companies. I remember there was one company that it was some sort of fitness company. You would attach suckers to your legs and things like that. And they came. It was a £2 IPO, and it came in at 270, and people stagged it and made their money and everything. But okay, that's fine. They'll soon be found out, and they got kicked off the exchange because they were rubbish. But today, Gary, you don't get a call from somebody say, "Have you seen this new company? It's coming to the JSE quite soon." Like a Dimension Data or a Cash Build, even something like that, and then building a huge business that is worthy of the name listing. You don't see that, Gary, anymore.
No, you don't. I think that the whole environment has changed dramatically. I mean, part of it is, I suppose, how things are communicated, but it's also just, those. I think our venture capital space just isn't creating those types of businesses. The new listings that we're seeing now, I mean, we've got obviously Zeta coming up now,
yes.
Not the Zeta with ER, but it's essentially an unbundling. And so many of the new listings are just spin-outs of these existing big businesses rather than where you want them to come through the alt X. So you want them to be young, dynamic businesses that are actually raising capital and becoming these big, strong trees in our South African forest. But just to David's point quickly, I've just got the total return figures for you, and I've done it across FTSE, Euro, stocks, the S&P 500, and JSE. JSE.
Why are you showing me up, Gary, as being such a smart man?
No.
I'm not showing you up. I'm just,
no, it's David, these youngsters are sickening, aren't they?
This is exactly to your point. I'm just supporting you here. JSE All Share Index.
How clever you are! I love it.
JSE All Share Index up 12.9% in dollars. S&P 500 up 242% in dollars over 10 years. FTSE 100 up 41% in dollars, so still significantly better than the JSE, but nowhere near what the US has returned. And the Euro stocks up, around 70% if you rebase that to dollars and include the total return. So it's all about the S&P 500, and I think David's hit the nail on the head there. It's the type of culture that American business has. We reward shareholders, we're capitalist, and we're here to make business, which I just don't think Europe and the UK have, to be frank. And that's why they might not be quite as anti-capitalist as South Africa, but they're certainly nowhere near the US. So.
You know what? It's such an important message, to people out there. And I can't stress it, enough, because so many people are nervous to go. But for me, investing and what we have to do is you have to convince people to protect what they have. And the only way, to protect their purchasing power, because by staying here, you constantly get people, yes, I've been here and so on. And for me, it's I'm an evangelist when it comes to that, saying that's the history. It's going to continue. I'm surprised. I must admit, and thank you for it. I was only kidding you there. But, the euro, I thought the euro, I didn't think the euro would be that high. I mean, when I say relative to even the UK markets. But Lindsay, how far they have fallen behind, how far they have fallen behind the US. And you've got to decide now whether the US is going to continue that trend, whether the businesses there are strong enough to continue versus, the US, I mean, Europe, UK and what's the name and South Africa.
But I want to bring the South African angle in here because it's a small example which is very personal to me.
Just one thing I have to reiterate, and it's important.
Right. Go on.
That South African index that Gary is highlighting includes our mining companies, which are all offshore, Naspers Process, British American Tobacco, AB InBev, Richemont. Okay. So understand that is not pure South Africa. That includes a lot of offshore so-called rand hedges.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. No,
this is certainly not the currency at play. It's not just a currency story, David. It's 100% right. I suppose if you're going to pick the best 25 businesses in the world, I mean, you know, where are you going to find them? And I think it's the regulatory framework. But it's something else as well. And you have my colleague Viv on the show quite often. And I'm sure he's kind of put this point of view across before. But it's also that America still attracts the best talent. If you are highly, highly, highly skilled in whatever field you are, the place to go and really make it is still seen as the U.S. You don't go to Europe to really be at the top of your trade. You go to America. And as long as America continues to attract that talent, you would assume that their businesses continue to dominate the global landscape.
Come back to South Africa now, and again, I was starting to describe an intensely personal corporate story about a South African company that was founded in Cape Town and was struggling along, couldn't find any investment from South African investors. I don't know if I invested in it, but we probably didn't go about it in the same way due to our naivety. But it was picked up by the Dutch, and that's one of the reasons that I'm in the Netherlands. They said, okay, yeah, we'll invest in your company, but you've got to move your headquarters to the Netherlands, you've got to come to Rotterdam, you've got to do this, you've got to do this, and you've got to do that. So they did, with me as a small shareholder. And it was that sort of attitude that I thought, if the CEO and my dear friend hadn't been young enough to uproot his family and move to the Netherlands, the company probably would have died a death. And it's that, environment of I don't know, it's almost like a non-corporate environment in South Africa where you're not encouraged to do things and to get on with it. It doesn't create the environment that allows you to be successful, David.
Yeah, it's our banks. The banks are, if you want to go to a bank and you want to raise money, they're going to say, Mr. Boysen, what car you got? What cars your granny got? What cars your mommy got? What cars, all of this? They want everything as collateral. So the risk taking is zero. Mm. Our banks, even in the lockdown, all that money was set aside. Very little was lent. You find out how much money that was set aside to kind of help business through actually got to those business. Impossible, because they hung on to it. People hang on to that money, and our banks are not the kind of creative banks around that that give money to those kind of ventures. So you cannot extract, and if you do, believe me, it's under such difficult conditions, or alternatively at such high levels. So we haven't got that culture, Lindsay, and that's why you were able to get it there. And strange enough, we come from an admiring environment. But the mine is in the 1800s. You know, they went to individuals. It was private equity that funded the expansion of South Africa.
I was going to say, you speak to any South African entrepreneur starting a greenfields business, they'll tell you about the three Fs immediately. Friends, fools, and family. That's where you get your funding. You're not going to get it from banks. That was exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. I was a friend and a fool, but that's very interesting. Okay, let's have a look at the markets now. Because we've got the rand changing its big figure almost from day to day now. The dollar rand is 16.95. The British pound against the rand is 20.36. The euro rand is 17.57. The euro dollar 103.70, which is unchanged in the last 24 hours. British pound has gone back above 120. 120.12, that exchange rate. Yeah. It was 103.30 3 months ago. The gold price is 17.57, which is $17 up. Since this time yesterday, platinum is up 3.5% to 1013, and palladium is up 1.2% to 1856. Now, the oil price has been all over the place recently, and we haven't spoken about China yet, but China really does exert a huge influence on commodities prices. And now that they may be saying, wait a second, the natives are revolting, so we'd better do something about it and throw them a few bones. In other words, you know, say, well, we're going to vaccinate this and maybe relax that. But anyway, Brent crude oil up 2.75% to $85.42. West Texas crude $79.19, which is up 2.5%. What else we got? Natural gas up 2.5%. Wheat up 1.3%. Iron ore is above 100 again, 101.50. And it's a generally green across the board because of the China story. Now, the US 10-year Treasury bond yield, that is currently prevailing at 3.71%. And I think that's because of the rising oil price. The South African 10-year, 10.23%. Nice move. 4.5 basis points to the downside for that yield. And what else have we got here? Bitcoin, despite the collapse of another company linked to FTX, 16,423. And S&P 500 futures, one of you two chaps will give me an update, a more accurate update, but it's essentially unchanged, 3,972. Gary, any other stories that I've missed today, apart from the, the only thing I've really mentioned is the China story. What else is going on in the world?
Unemployment rate coming out today was a nice story. You're getting weirdly stronger in the face of a difficult market. I still don't quite understand how that's working, but I suppose we're still getting some tailwind from the higher commodity prices. But the formal sector seems to be picking up a lot of those jobs, and it's certainly just another maybe optimistic tone. But overall market down around a third of 1% today. It just the resources really bucking the trend. They're up 0.81%. Industrial index down slightly, down also about a third, with the financials really feeling the pain, down at 1.66%.
Okay, I've got the movers on my screen, individual stocks wise. Naspers. I mean, I woke up this morning and I saw bleary-eyed, and I looked and the Hang Seng was up 4%. I thought, but there's rioting going on in China. And they thought, there was some press announcement going to be made, or rather press conference going to be held in a couple of hours time at the time. And so everything went shooting up. So Naspers today, according to my screen, I do have to refresh it because I'm not like you two clever chaps with fancy things.
I like Gary's screen.
Oh, no, it's come off,
of
course.
Bloomberg. He must be affording the big Bloomberg screen, you know. At only rich firms can afford that, like McKinsey's
firm. Yeah, and people that can find charts within seconds rather than minutes, like you.
Yeah, can you see how fast he did that?
Hey? I know, he's a very snappy fellow. Actually, the Naspers thing was from this morning, and I've refreshed. So it's Karoo up 7.1%, Thungela up nearly 5%, Kumba Iron Ore 2.5% better, and again, a China story. Anglo American PLC up 2.4%, and Glencore up 1.9%. Downside, DLD gold down 3.25%. First Rand down 2.9%. Is that it's down 2.9%. Mr. Price has had a horrible time of late, down nearly 2.9%. And AVI down nearly 2.9% as well. Mr. Price, David, they're trading, their results came out and they got slaughtered by market participants. What do you make of a company like that? It's never quiet, is it?
They badly, they've got no growth overseas, so it's all local, and it's in a very competitive area. I'm concerned about number one, the consumer, how much the consumer really has in his back pocket, and also particularly where the apparel retailers are. So I'm as I said at the beginning of the show, I'm a little cautious when you get a bank rate at 10.5%, it makes a big difference. It makes a big difference to what people can afford and how much they will spend and how much they can actually put on their credit cards. So that's why I'm tending towards, where the private investment's going to take place in, more on the industrial side of this economy. More so than relying on the consumer. So just watch that, just watch that area. I know we got very carried away with, new vehicle sales and secondhand car sales and, what the outlook is. But I think be careful of, the retail sector.
In other words, be selective. There's a Mr. Price and there's, if you look at retail, you can say, and they're poles apart. Mr. Price versus Gary, for example, ShopRite. I mean, they're both retailers, but they're way, way different in the way they run their businesses and also the people they service and the goods that they sell. Yeah. Gary, would you be a retail investor at the moment?
Yeah, I think, as I said earlier, I think it really comes down to specifics. It comes down to which retailer. Would I be buying Spar here? Absolutely not. Way too much going on there. But ShopRite, I think if you're looking at a grocer, you know, I take David's point about apparel. How strong is the South African consumer? You look at Woolies. They seem to be doing much better than they have in a long time. If you consider just to pick up a Country Road and David Jones in Australia, where they've suffered for so long. So maybe it comes down to a valuation story around almost a hybrid group like Woolies, where you've got the apparel, you've got the food business as well. But if I had to pick one retailer, it would be ShopRite. I think you've covered the main points on ShopRite, but it's also its track record. It is just delivered over and over again. And in a country like South Africa, if you are picking South African stocks, ShopRite is one that is very, very defensive. It serves the right customers. It serves the right price point, and it has the right technology in place. And if you just look at their online delivery compared to the rest, it's streaks ahead.
Yeah, David, when it comes to the points that Gary has just made, the ShopRite as a group has obviously a number of different offerings in its retail portfolio. You can go to somewhere in the middle of nowhere in some dorp, and there'll be a shop there, and you don't know it's ShopRite, but it's a Usave or something like that. I can't remember the name of the discount companies, but at the same time, you can go to Sandton City, which is probably your favourite place apart from Melrose Arch to go to. There's an amazing supermarket there, if I can call it that, that is very, very high end, and is sort of replicating, but doing the Woolworths offering in a ShopRite way. So they managed to serve different segments of the demographic and do it very well.
Yeah, superb company, and it does stand out. So that remains my favourite store. Spar have let us down, particularly locally as well. Woolies are coming back. Woolies are coming back. They're getting their apparel right. As Gary mentioned, you can see what they've done in the Australian operation seem to be coming right. I'm going to Australia next week. I'll give you a first-hand understanding of that, but. It also came from a very low base. But, Woolies are coming right. But I'm not a great favorite of local retail. I'm really not talking to my book. I'm just expressing views that perhaps are being picked up from, reading results and so on.
Okay.
Would I go into – no.
Okay, you're a cynic in that regard, because it's the opportunity cost. It's not you're saying I don't like the company, it's just you're saying the opportunity cost of deploying capital into this particular company means I can't put it into this other company, which I favour, whether it be local or overseas. David, give us the Dow, S&P and NASDAQ, please, before we go.
They're picking up. In fact, they're all in positive territory. The S&P, I haven't got the Dow, the S&P's up 0.22% at the moment, 397.3, and the Nasdaq's also picked up 0.2% at 11069. European markets are also Lindsay, not a lot of conviction at the moment, in these markets. They're just kind of bumbling along. And I think you've got the standoff between the economists and the Fed. Economists saying, look, the Fed's going to loosen. The Fed's going to start reducing, and we'll probably find things easing by mid next year. The Fed saying no. So I'm trying to put it in a quick soundbite. There is the standoff that's taking place. I'm backing the private sector. I'm backing the economists and the strategists, not the Fed. I think that they will back down sooner. But it's this interplay, and nobody wants to take any risks ahead of it.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening. Gary, good to have you back. David, as always, well done. And maybe we can slot you in when you're in a completely different time zone next week in the Antipodes.
9 hours
ahead. Exactly. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities. Gary Boyson, I think I can remember that he is from the award-winning Rand Swiss in Johannesburg, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.